Hello and welcome to the Longevity Now podcast, the place for all your news and views of life extension from around the world. Today we have a guest that you probably have heard before, a familiar face, a familiar voice on the Longevity Now podcast, Kevin Parrott of Open Cures. I would say one of the hardest working people in life extension and rejuvenation technology. And even though you've heard him before, you definitely want to tune into this podcast. We have a wide-ranging discussion all the way from supplements to the sad state of the current healthcare and medical industry to some positive things to look forward to the future. So if you're a biohacker and you need some tests, or maybe you need to hear more about some of the current therapies that are available, well, here you go. And now I would like to welcome back to the Longevity Now podcast, the founder of Open Cures, Kevin Parrott.
Hey, Justin, thanks for asking me to join your podcast again.
Of course, everyone is familiar with Open Cures, and the podcast listeners would like to get an update on how things are going. We've talked a couple of times in past years when you were kind of getting things rolling. You know, there's a couple of different avenues you're pursuing, but now Open Cures, let us know what's going on.
Well, Longevity and was in on it from the very beginning. They helped pay for some of the coding and some of the funding to put it together. It was back when Victor Bjork was helping me and wanted to find some way of helping Longevity members find a way to track their own measurements and their own data. And so we actually created a small prototype with that funding, and now it is over the years expanded. So, you know, Longevity can take an awful lot of credit for lighting a fire that is now actually growing. And Open Cures is basically a software platform. So we actually have a bricks and mortar operation, which offers blood draws and advanced diagnostics and untargeted metabolomics on site. And we also send out kits for remote blood draws for the same services. So there's this blood draw sort of diagnostics component.
We also let me stop you just for a second there, because I'm very interested in doing testing, biomarker testing and things like that. What type of blood draw is it? Because I'm very happy with the companies that have the pinprick, where you squeeze out a couple of drops of blood because it's so easy and you put it in the mailbag and there it goes. Now, is yours more of a, does it require phlebotomist?
It's a regular blood draw.
Okay, got it.
We use mass spectroscopy to look at basically a subset of metabolites, the lipids.
So you need a large volume of blood.
It's just that the pinprick basically cuts open a whole bunch of cells. So you get contamination of the blood with the contents of what's inside cells. And of course, pretty much all the databases and reference tables are built on what is in actual venous blood. So until somebody goes through a pinprick, and sometimes you get more damage than others. So the actual creation of the pinprick and the cut can cause an awful lot of variability.
Well, that is very interesting. I had never heard that as to why, you know, certain tests require the venous blood draw versus a pinprick. Yeah.
Yeah. So things like sugar and a whole bunch of metabolites, they're fairly insensitive to these kinds of things. But if you're doing sort of stuff with mass spec where you want to know what small amounts, and it can be thrown off quite easily with these assays. But the good news is there are new microsamplers, they're calling them. There's something called a Tasso device, which is basically like a little suction cut tube with suction that you, if you've ever used those glucose meters, like Freestyle Libre 2, where you put a device on your arm and it continuously monitors glucose, you can get microsamplers like that. And they actually fill up about half a mil directly into a cryovial. So, and then there's a few other companies working on this. I've actually have a friend who's working on a interstitial device. So rather than actually having to get blood, what about the interstitial fluid that is just available in tissue, that where you don't need to do a pinprick, or you actually don't damage the cells either? You actually just sample the interstitial fluid. Of course, that's a much smaller amount, but for a lot of the assays that you can do, you only need a couple of microliters sometimes, or 20 microliters, which is very easy gotten from interstitial fluid.
So I interrupted you just a little bit, but I think that was an interesting point to be made. But you're mentioning about how you were getting more people to submit and join the Open Cures platform and
Correct.
go on with that.
So the whole point of Open Cures is to minimize time to the development of interventions. And the strategy for that is to harness the self-interest of individuals who want to measure their health and collect data and then share their data and aggregate it so that we can mine that data for insights that will lead to these interventions. So basically, we're sort of, it's a DSI, citizen science empowerment, where the people who want the interventions the most can be given the tools to generate the data that will actually develop the interventions. So it's a big lift because there's an awful lot of moving pieces to such a thing. You're trying to integrate research with development and then feedback loops and all of this stuff, and somebody has to pay for it at the end of the day. But ultimately, you know, I've been thinking, so another thing that Open Cures does, in addition to providing access to advanced technologies like mass spec and metabolomics, is we help people biobank their own biospecimens. So when we do a remote blood draw, unlike a pinprick, you don't get any extra blood with a pinprick. You only have enough for the single thing. So what I think actually is more valuable is for you to acquire a significant amount of fluid from the individual, hopefully the blood, and then you put a whole bunch of it on ice in liquid nitrogen, because every drop of blood is like a recording, like a liquid crystal kind of recording, that if you can interrogate the blood, you could interrogate the state of the entire human at that point in time. All that information is condensed down in the physical substrate of the blood. Once you generate data, that's just a snapshot in time with a particular technology, and it's not really potentially that useful, but you can always go back to the biospecimen. And you also need measurements over time. So longitudinal sampling is super important if you want to tie biomarker changes to actually health changes. So that's one of the problems, is we don't have the reference databases of what changes in health enough to be able to say, this is a pattern that leads to a particular risk profile. This is all getting filled in now. And what's really nice is, you know, we now have artificial intelligence, which can actually start reading genomes and RNA transcript results and various types of very big data types of results.
And they can metabolomic data and proteomic data is exactly. Big. And yeah. I imagine AI can tease out some correlations that maybe it would take a person years and years to figure out.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So even the data in one metabolomics assay from one time point, it produces potentially thousands, hundreds, maybe 100,000 data points. There is no way that anybody can actually go through all of that stuff. But if you actually do a proteomics assay, a metabolomics assay, genomics, which doesn't change, obviously. So, but if you can get those three layers of data from the same individual over a period of time, you can then use AI to start inferring relationships between metabolites and proteins, which you would not normally be able to do, but not even with the computing power we have. So I'm, up until about 2 years ago, I was pretty depressed about the prospects for minimizing time to the development of interventions with just solely on the brain power of the people that I know, not only because people are horrible at collaborating and sharing information necessary with each other, but even if they did share as much information as they possibly could, we still didn't have the technologies to tease out the patterns and mine it
Is Open Cures partnering up or in discussions partnering up with some AI platforms out there, some startups or anything?
Yeah, which is like one of the most exciting pieces of news that maybe I could share, is that I have joined the Price Lab, which is a new lab at the Buck Institute, which is focused almost entirely on data analysis using artificial intelligence and machine learning on data. So the fit with what I've been building for 4 or 5 years, with what Nathan Price and Lee Hood were building with the paradigms, what they call scientific wellness. And it's basically using science to analyze health before people get sick, and then trying to make sure that they're able to optimize that health using scientific direction and guidance. So that's kind of what it's on the way to, sort of immortality, I guess. And it's pretty hard to die if you're healthy. So I'm kind of trying to bank on keeping healthy as much as possible. But if you don't measure it, you can't manage it. So we need to be able to measure our health as multidimensionally as possible. If we rely on the current paradigm or the status quo to actually take care about this stuff in a time frame relevant to our parents or ourselves, it's just not going to happen. That just is too crazy.
Yeah, so OpenCures, you have that platform, help people measure their biomarkers and, of course, biobanking and partnering up with AI. But over the last few years, what is your greatest success story that you have with the people you've been working with?
So, been an interesting journey. I've worked with four or five development entities, groups. All of them sort of didn't work out for some reason or the other. COVID, of course, was a wonderful little digression in most people's lives and in their enterprises. But I wound up working a conference call, a Zoom call that Michael Grieve was holding, a Forever Healthy conference call. And there was a guy named Vincenzo Domina, and he was a programmer. He was an engineer, a race car engine designer, turned program engineer for health when he came across his own sort of health challenges in his family. And so he taught himself about programming and stuff. And then he heard me talking on this Zoom call, and he said, "I want to help OpenCures." And so he was like the last person after four iterative attempts to work with people. He came on, and I've worked with him now for 4 years. So the biggest success story is I found a co-founder that is as dedicated to this cause as anybody I've ever met. It's
And
incredible.
speaking of Vincenzo, I believe at one point when I was speaking with him in the past, he was using some interventions for his parents who were in ill health. Can you share anything about that? If they're
It
doing
was
well or if it worked or.
yeah, everything works, but nothing was like a silver bullet. So it's all just a matter of iteratively providing people information. I'm helping my own parents. My mom is doing incredibly well in her 80s. Like, she feels great, and she still doesn't like to exercise, but she does, and she takes the supplements that I tell her, and they seem to help. And my dad doesn't like to listen to me at all, but he actually keeps moving and he doesn't stop working. So that's been very good for him. This is really an unfocused on topic, is the love we should have for our parents, and let's get things going as quick as possible for them, and it'll
I
happen
know.
pretty
I
quietly.
hear you. My parents are getting old and are getting a little more frail, and I'm hoping that I can, help them to stay healthy yet for longer. And I recall on our last podcast, or perhaps talking off camera or something, that plasmalogen figured prominently in the treatment for your mother, and you, I believe, are taking it yourself. And is there any recent research or any other stories you can share as to the success of using
Yeah, I think,
plasmalogen?
yeah, if you go to, there's a new website that Dayan Goodenow, who is a leading plasmalogen expert, has. It's drgoodenow.com, surprisingly enough. And on that website, there's a list of publications which I think might indicate that what the importance of plasmalogens are in neurodegenerative diseases. But the reason why they're important in neurodegenerative diseases is because they're critical cell membrane components. And when your neuronal cells start to go bad, that's when you start to notice. But actually, all of your cells really need these. This is a critical phospholipid. It's made by your liver. And when you eat it, it's destroyed by your acidification in your gut. So you have to live with how much your body makes internally. And if you're deficient, you have a five times greater chance of getting dementia and being one of the earliest people to die. So this is just an example of a natural compound, just like omega-3, and but it's a super, it's like even more important than omega-3, but it's a paradigm that we should be able to keep our car between the white lines. If you imagine your body as a car, we should be able to drive between the white lines and then be told when we're deficient, be able to fix things so that we don't drive into the ditch, kind of thing. Course correction, really. The plasmalogens, super critical. Really, people should be paying attention to them a lot more, of course, because it's a natural compound and pharmaceutical companies can't patent it. It becomes like N-acetylcysteine or various other supplements, which are super important and people take. But it's going to become more well known because the results are clear in people who are taking it.
Yeah, and you mentioned something about taking it orally and that your gut digests it, but is
Actually,
the.
yeah, no, yeah, that's a good point. So plasmalogen is available in foods, for instance, in seafood, which is where omega-3s come from. It's part of that. Because they have a vinyl ether linkage, that's the bond that is critical for their function, but it's also the bond that is labile in an acidic environment. So what Prodrome Sciences has done is they've created an orally bioavailable version of plasmalogen which raises the level of a certain species of plasmalogen. Of course, it's a family of plasmalogens, and that are really that you make, but there's one that's particularly associated with cognitive decline. And this is the version that he's providing. And it's having really amazing effects in people with MS, ALS. I mean, it's a very broad spectrum of diseases that
sure.
can be okay. associated with plasmalogen deficiency.
Yeah, so there's a success story. Now, what other, either some people who have come to Open Cures or yourself, what other types of interventions are you currently doing to rejuvenate yourself or delay aging?
Well, good question, because I, of course, have very specific needs. Being a 61-year-old, I had an impact, a car accident in my 20s. I have a lot of scar tissue, and as a result, that needs to be dealt with. So, but it seems a lot of people have scar tissue as they get older, too. So there is a technology now called shockwave therapy, which is what you would expect. It's an impacting gun, which puts out a little shockwave, and you can be focused at different levels. It can be spherical or laser or whatever you can. It can be done. And the frequency at which it outputs can destroy scar tissue. That's one of the only things that I've had in the past 20 or 30 years that actually seems to rip apart the scar tissue very.
And your skin then remodels.
Yeah, but and it's underneath. So
underneath. Okay.
So it's without really damaging the rest of the tissue. It's actually can address these adhesions and these things of the myofascia. And it also actually can trigger regenerative response because it depolarizes your cell membrane and causes ion flows across the membrane. So it does mimic a little bit of a wounding response. So it can trigger regeneration. So that's one thing I'm doing here. It's something that a lot of chiropractic offices are adopting as well, obviously, in sports medicine, various other things. Another thing that we've got here that we're making available, we actually have our offices located right next to a gym with 1,200 members. So I'm also thinking about how can I enjoy all of these things and have other people pay for them? So we have actually red light infrared sauna, which is combined, which has been shown to be good for mitochondria and skin and various other things. So that's one of those passive kind of things that, you know, I could take a Zoom call in there and I may someday, you know, be doing that.
Not only is there science behind the red light, you know, the infrared light, but also saunas. It's been shown in large studies that cardiovascular risk decreases for people who use the sauna. Not only that, but it's nice and relaxing. I like going in the sauna. So,
well, this is the interesting thing is that the Finnish sauna, which is the one where you get the hot air, the air heats up and then the heat goes from the air into your body. Right? That's the normal sauna. That's been shown to actually be associated with extended longevity in a lot of studies as well. But the infrared sauna warms you up from the inside out because the infrared actually doesn't warm up the air. The heat is not actually heating. You're not heating up from the inside out or outside in. You're heating it from the inside out. So there are some complementary biological effects. So I envision someday someone's going to put a Finnish sauna and an infrared sauna. I don't really even know, but I think a lot of the future types of therapies are going to be non-invasive, radiation, heat, maybe ultrasound. And if you look at Levine's work with pulsed magnetic fields, patterning on embryogenesis and development and stem cell function, we can hopefully envision a future where we can induce regenerative responses within a body without actually having to do too much than trigger the electric or field.
Right. Yeah, that is possible. Well, that's great that you mentioned a few things that some people could perhaps investigate and partake on their own. Now, you and I, we've been talking for several years, and of course, we're on kind of a similar journey about trying to achieve.
We're getting old at the same time.
We're getting old. That's right. Well, hey, even though I have a shaved head, it's still kind of getting gray, so you're not the only one. Yeah.
Well, actually, if you notice, if you see any black in here at all, it's because my gray is actually returning to black. And this is
it's a little bit.
People can't see it.
Right.
But
it is starting to turn.
There's actual black.
For anyone who has met Kevin in the past, you know that he's had gray hair for quite a while. But now it's white. Yeah, now it's starting to get some color back. So that's great. That's a success story right there.
I just read a paper, not a paper, but it's becoming better known that you can actually reverse graying with specific supplements. And I think N-acetylcysteine is one and a few others because it's just oxidative stress in the melanin producing cells, which are bleaching basically the pigment. And if you can address that, but if you're doing that at the cellular level of the stem cells of your follicles, what else is going on in your body? Am I protecting stem cells and niches somewhere else in my body, which
We
are,
can hope. We can
I
hope.
hope.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's obviously that's something positive, but I've been looking back over the last 20 some years. I mean, I've been doing this a long time, over 20 years, and I'm a little disappointed or depressed about the fact that there isn't widespread, commercially available, relatively cheap rejuvenation treatments by now. I mean, when I got into it, I thought, oh boy, this is going to take a lot of work. It's going to take some research. But I mean, through the 2000s, early 2000s, and then, 2015 and
Well,
2020, I mean, we've seen a lot of companies start. Some companies failed. Some treatments have been tried. And there still isn't anything widespread out there that's, you could just go to your doctor and say, hey, I'm feeling, I'm getting some wrinkles and gray hair. Give me that rejuvenation treatment. And he's like, okay, $100. Here you go to the pharmacy, get your whatever. So I'm a little depressed about that. How do you view your journey so far, and how, I know it's been very difficult, but do you see positive things happening right now? Can you point to anything?
I think empowering people who want the thing, empowering them to get the thing is the most important way of shortcutting an awful lot of this. Health technology development right now is run by a bunch of people who don't actually care about the products and services that they're making for themselves. They don't have a personal vested interest. There's no sense of urgency.
It's mainly just a business thing,
It's a business thing.
profit
Money
thing. Yeah.
and profit is the goal. So of course, if it gets anywhere close to that, people are happy. But the products and the services, there's no penalty for non-performance on the current status quo of the system, which uses the suffering of individuals as the feedstock and energy source. It's the whole driver for all of this, for medical technology development, is the suffering of individuals. So the whole system is just using that as a source of potential energy for as an excuse to convert it into money and ego for the most part, because nobody gets their hand slapped for non-performance. There's no customer feedback.
Right. Well, I see that, and you're kind of going on a criticism of this system that a lot of other people have noticed, and you would say a systemic change in attitudes and structure of medicine and rejuvenation technology needs to happen. I mean, because right now it does seem like our current medical system is designed to not cure anyone, but just to relieve symptoms with very expensive drugs that have a lot
It's
of
making
side
money off of
effects.
it makes money off of sickness.
Right.
So of course, if you got rid of the sickness, they wouldn't be able to make money. So we need to actually make money off of wellness, and that is the next step. That's why the scientific wellness thing that I was talking about with Nathan Price, I think, is pretty critical. And the system is just doing what the system is designed to do. The people in the system are not they are individually fine. It's just that the system was built to look after acute care, disaster, catastrophic care, because we really couldn't do anything else. It was all just fixing broken bones and ripping out tumors and stuff. So we
Well,
did
that's
what the
what
system.
the system does very well is surgery. I mean, especially in the US, I mean, it's the best surgeons and surgery in the world. If you need something repaired, physically repaired, or something broken or something cut out of your body, it does spectacular. Everything else, it seems, is just.
We want to stop people from needing those things, though. So
Yes.
we had a conversation with a CEO of a local hospital chain, and he was basically saying, if you fixed all this stuff, we wouldn't be in business. And he was kind of serious, but joking at the same time. And it really does tell you that it's morals and ethics and all of the rest of that aside, it's almost like a thermodynamic math problem. If you want something done in the shortest period of time, give people agency who want it done in the shortest period of time. So right now, there's a broken economic cycle in that the consumer of health technologies, at least the ones that are suffering, generally have no agency. They're passive. They're waiting for somebody else to do things for them. So how do we give them and empower individuals, patients, if you want to call them that, but even pre-patient, people that are just in their 50s who are still relatively healthy, but they can see the writing on the wall kind of thing. How do you empower motivated populations to influence the rate of development of these technologies, ones who care about it? And you do that by giving them the tools to measure their health, aggregate their data, and because you can't develop technologies without data. So this is my goal is how do you make technology development responsible and responsive to the need of the consumer? Well, put the consumer in charge. How do you do that? Give them some energy, give them some agency. If they
Give
have
them a
money, they
platform
can do
like
it.
Open Cures to
Exactly.
help them along the way.
And it's not just OpenCures. I hope that this is done. The only reason I'm frankly doing OpenCures is because it is at least addressing the stumbling block, and it can serve as an example and maybe as a wake up for people who look at it and go, yeah, this is the solution. This is the blockage of the system, and this is a potential solution or a way of approaching a solution. Somebody comes along and they say they want to do it the way I want to do it. It's great. I'll quit. I'll
Yeah,
do something
sure. That's right.
else.
That's one thing I just briefly, if I could get your opinion, I thought that a lot of the startup people in the rejuvenation biotech space are planning on, or their investors want them to sell to a large pharmaceutical company eventually, or
Yeah.
something like that,
Yeah.
to turn a profit, get their cash out of the thing. But I've been arguing a little bit behind the scenes that rejuvenation enthusiasts need to basically go vertical from the
Yeah.
beginning to the end
Yep. Because
of
they can also.
development,
Yeah.
consumer outreach, the production, the GMP manufacturing. I think my feeling is we need to do that ourselves, and we need to own those companies, because if we pawn it
Yep.
off to the big corporations, it might not get done.
So we don't, I mean, that you are definitely lighting up on exactly the sort of strategy, sort of thing, the paradigm that I'm trying to think about. The whole general principle is empowering those entities and people who care about the result, about the product and the service and the distribution of those products and services. Those are the people who should be given the most authority and agency for development. If you're giving the agency to entities that only think money is the metric for success, then they will stop when there's money. If there is no chance of money, unfortunately, and there's so many steps that don't have money involved with them,
And that's
right?
even relative. Some
Yeah.
will go f
Yeah. Small amount or a large amount.
if the margin is not enough, they might be making a profit, but if it's not large enough, they might dump the project. Yeah, I've seen
Yeah.
that before.
Aerovail was a company in Seattle that was offering basically scientific wellness to a bunch of people. They were already associated with Providence Health. They had 5,000 people as part of their membership. They had all the lifestyle coaches, and they did advanced multi-omics on these people and provided them with information that moved them into a better, healthy space. And they were profitable. They were in the black, but their investors, who are the sort of the blue chip glitterati from San Francisco, didn't see the margins and see the speed of as being fast enough for enough of them, enough income. I mean, I have to question the intelligence of all these super uber wealthy people when they don't realize that they're on the same conveyor belt as everybody else, and that it's not about making money. It's about shortening the period of time to the avail, creating a system so that you can have a personalized solution to your personal problem. Right now, it's just not there. And we need to, as concerned people, that it's not a mistake that the tagline for Open Cures is we are the cavalry, because there is nobody coming to save us. And Michael J. Fox, when he wrote about Parkinson's and creating his own foundation, says there is no Department of Cures. You can't go to the government. And we really need to take responsibility for creating a system that can go from beginning to end, from idea to testing the idea, to having a product and a service, and then using the value generated by that product or service to funnel it back into getting to the next better product or service, into the research.
I think we also need to control the manufacturing too.
Yeah. Oh,
I think
every step of the
some
way. Every step, we need to consume. And it's not even we need to control. It's the agent that is going to make decisions, has to make decisions, that when there's a choice that was something going to speed things up, or is something going to slow things down? We cannot reward delays, and often delays get rewarded, and at the very least, they are not penalized. So the whole idea is about optimization and efficiency and sharing data and transparency and all of this stuff. And you can't do that in the current environment where intellectual property is rewarded by hoarding it for 50 years. From a patient's perspective, I'm a thyroid cancer patient and sitting in the hospital when I was actually thinking about all of these problems. And I thought, this is not sustainable. I mean, if I'm waiting for a solution to my medical issue and it's going to take somebody 4 years of research and then 10 years of development and $15 billion before anybody gives a flying whatever, I, as a person, I do not want to be in a hospital bed again and have the answer be the same answer that was being given to people 50 years ago. That is not, that is pathetic. That is a failure. We are failing on all counts.
That is not acceptable.
Not acceptable.
What is more acceptable is people who are doing things and doing the work like yourself. Could you tell people how to learn more about Open Cures?
Yep, for sure. You can go to the website, opencures.org. We are a for-profit, not charity, sort of hybrid. We're looking for programmers that want to get interest into sort of the data management aspects of it. And we want to empower individuals.
Yeah. And I want to mention, too, that I've seen recently that you've added a few more products to your website, too, for, you know, get functional action.
We've got some. Well, the plasmalogen, of course, is the thing that's almost proprietary that you can't really buy anywhere because it's only available from one company, actually. There are some plasmalogen supplements derived from natural sources, but they don't really survive your gastric acids. So go to Prodrome Sciences or come to the website if you're interested in plasmalogens. And of course, there's other supplements there. And just reach out to me if anybody is out there and is a warrior against aging and death, and they would like to try and save the lives of their parents and themselves in a time frame that makes sense. You know, let's work together. Let's at least communicate and let's find ways of doing this.
Well, great, Kevin. Thanks so much for joining us on the Longevity Now podcast.
Thank you, Justin. Always great to see you.
As I mentioned in the introduction, if you're a biohacker and you really haven't settled upon where you're going to get your testing done or a platform where you can track your data and monitor your progress, take a look at Open Cures. Because Kevin at Open Cures, besides just trying to help the individual track their progress, he's also looking to transform the entire healthcare industry and rejuvenation therapies. Until next time, I'm Justin Lowe.